guess who's back? Back again. Yvonne's back. Tell a friend. Hi. Guess who? Well, I already introduced myself. I'm going to do it again. It's me, Yvonne. Yes, I know. We haven't talked in a while. Don't look at me like that. I told you I was going to be outside, okay? I told you it was going to be a busy summer. But I did say I'll be back after Beyonce wrapped the Renaissance tour. If I am wrong, please do not pull receipts on me because that would be embarrassing. Anyway, welcome back to another episode, another season of Coffee with Yvonne, a show for creatives and entrepreneurs. I am so ready to get back on this mic for more interviews, what's the brew, and all the things, y'all. How you been? It's been a while. Come on, sit down and visit for a while. You know, we're going to have a great season. I have a lot of guests lined up that we're going to talk about different topics from this episode, for example, mental health and faith. We also have an episode about real estate, not that DJ Envy stuff. We'll talk more about that in What's the Brew. But we have an episode talking about real estate. We even have an author on our show who has penned her first children's book. It's just all kind of great things this season for Coffee with Yvonne. And I am just ready to share all the great things I have planned for you and all of my followers. Oh, another episode update. Burr, 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 burr. We have reached, you ready for this, y'all? 12,700 downloads of Coffee with Yvonne. And I am just, one, so humbled by that, because when I started this podcast, honestly, it was started again during the pandemic and as a YouTube channel originally. And I just set up my phone, got my headphones, and decided to start this platform. And by moving it to a podcast, I am able to reach so many people literally around the world through the sound of my voice and bring to you so many great things from creatives and entrepreneurs who are changing the game in their industry. So that being said, you want to get into this What's the Brew? Because we got to talk about DJ Envy and this accusations about his real estate business investment. So grab your coffee and let's chat. All right, first up, DJ Envy linked to Ponzi scheme with a real estate investor, Caesar Pina. Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar, DJ Envy, he is the co-host of the very popular The Breakfast Club with Charlamagne the God. I was even surprised, sidebar y'all, that my mom knew what The Breakfast Club was, because I was like, wait a minute, first it's TMZ, now it's The Breakfast Club? Not you being up on T more than I am. But DJ Envy has been a longtime host of that show. And he apparently invested in this real estate investment in which they buy houses and flip them and then turn them into multi-units in New Jersey, more specifically. So according to People magazine, Caesar Pina, a longtime business associate of radio host DJ Envy, was arrested on October 18th on federal charges that he committed a multi-million-dollar Ponzi-like investment fraud scheme. Pina, a New Jersey real estate investor, was charged with one count of wire fraud, U.S. Attorney Philip R. Selinger announced in a press release after appearing in Newark federal court. Pina was released on $1 million bond. Dang. DJ Envy, whose real name is Rashawn Casey. Okay, Rashawn, isn't named in the charges, according to court documents. He partnered with the celebrity disc jockey and radio personality to conduct real estate seminars around the country. Though these seminars were self-promotional efforts and other marketing strategies, Pina developed a significant social media following. DJ Envy's attorney says that Envy is a victim and sits in the same place as the alleged victims on these schemes. Okay, I'm done. Look, can we talk? Can we talk real quick? While DJ Envy alleges that he did not know what his partner, Napoleon Dynamite, was doing on the side with this money, there is still an ethics clause I think we need to talk about. Can we talk? Okay, we're gonna talk. When it comes to things like investing or building, you know, generational wealth, which is a favorite buzz term in Black and Brown communities, there are those who harp on the desperation of others to get out of their situations or to create more for their families based on the foundation of their hard work that people have learned to monetize into wealth building for their own selves. One. Two, while DJ Envy may not have outwardly been involved in the day-to-day practices of the business, he still utilized his platform of millions of people. And that's just on the Breakfast Club, y'all. But we're not even counting social media or even word of mouth marketing through his personal celebrity connections and other investors to influence other people to invest in this business that he partnered with Napoleon Dynamite on. And I just want to make it known that even though you may not be directly involved in the scheme, if you're adjacent to the scheme, guess what? You're still scheming. So DJ Envy is maintaining his innocence and has spoken out about this on The Breakfast Club, despite Charlamagne Tha God's recommendation to hush. He has maintained his innocence, but it doesn't look good. The feds allegedly raided the iHeartRadio office. How embarrassing is that? Can you imagine you up there getting your coffee at the Keurig machine and here come the feds? Like, wait a minute. Who are they here for? I bet you that Slack channel tea was hot that day. But his wife allegedly wiped all of any kind of like luxury purchases from her IG. And the iHeartRadio team has allegedly, I keep saying allegedly because legality terms matter, started wiping videos of DJ Envy promoting this business on their platforms. Now, we know social media has a memory of an elephant. So by the time the feds roll up on you and say, what's up, fam? They've already gotten all the evidence and they need to have a case built against you. So I'm definitely paying close attention to this. I do think that it's going to expose a lot of MLMs, which is multi-level marketing schemes for various people who have grown in popularity using LinkedIn bio and various courses to encourage or influence other people to grow the same amount of wealth that they have. But some people do it for good reasons, some people do not. And apparently DJ Envy's reasons are now being uncovered by the feds. In our next story, the Queen Bee will forever be that girl, and now you can smell like her too. So Beyonce, okay, she's one of one. She's number one. She's the only one. I just had to throw that in there because I was at the Renaissance tour. You can check the receipts on my IG. Beyonce reveals her new fragrance called C'est Noir. And the fragrance has been in development. I found this on Mama Tina's page too. If you follow Beyonce, also follow Mama Tina. I love me some her. I'm like, can I be adopted? Because I know the food is good in that house. But Beyonce has, according to Because of Them We Can receipts, Beyonce has officially revealed the name of her new luxury fragrance after first teasing the highly anticipated product back in July. Beyonce's fragrance includes top notes of clementine, golden honey, heart notes of rose absolute, and jasmine sambac, and base notes of, I can't pronounce that, but it sounds like it smelled good. And then the fragrance bottle features a pretty mirror design that is clear nod to the silver dress code many of Beyonce fans followed through her Renaissance World Tour. And she even wore the perfume on the show some nights. So this fragrance is expected to release in November, basically now. And pre-sales are currently going on for the fragrance. This is the thing, though. The rollout for this campaign has been very interesting. There was a lot of buzz around it that she was going to be releasing something during the Renaissance World Tour. And the perfume was one of the things that was mentioned. During the tour, she had, or her team had, people dressed up in t-shirts promoting the launch of the fragrance. And then for the next part of the campaign rollout, the Instagram page, which if you go to my IG, I do two parts about marketing magic about the Beyonce Renaissance World Tour, how she uses IG to announce a lot of her messages. The Beyonce homepage on Instagram was changed to promote solely the fragrance. And then the third thing that has been interesting is Beyonce actually gave us a video where she talked to us. Now, if you're a True Hive member, I'm affiliate member of the Beehive, code 9481-444-87. How you doing? Beyonce don't talk to us. She don't talk to us at all on social media. We get pretty pictures, different looks. Sometimes we don't even get a caption, to tell you the truth. But Beyonce talked to us in real life, displaying the fragrance and the thought process behind it. So I'm interested to see what this rollout is going to look like. It is a little pricey, y'all. It's about $160 before you start jumping on it, saying that she has all this money, X, Y, and Z. Go ahead, go in your closet, look at them Yeezys in there. Also your Jordans, your handbag collection, and maybe that dinner that you went to the other night where the bill was over $300. So that being said, let people spend their money on what they deem valuable as worthy of spending their money on. Don't criticize folks for creating new products and also for enjoying those products. For the first interview of the season, I have joining me Reverend Dr. Tori Butler. Tori is someone I went to college with back at McDaniel, and she has always been a follower of the Lord, but she has also been someone who is down to earth and realistic in her approach and how she talks about it to not only me, but to her parishioners. And I wanted her to come on the show today, y'all, to talk about the relationship between mental health and faith. I think, and I'm not going to give up too much of the interview, but I do think that there is a relationship that we need to talk about, how mental health is something that we struggle with from time to time, you know, depending on your personal journey. But a lot of times when it comes to discussion of mental health and faith, there seems to be a disconnect that we have to choose one over the other. And in my conversation with Tori, we talk about how there's a lot of intersectionality between mental health and faith. And y'all, when I tell you I was about to be laid out on this floor here with the word that she was giving us, it was so inspiring, and I hope that you are inspired as well by her word. She is a local pastor here in the DMV area, so if you want to attend her church, please do. If you want to do it online and do Bedside Baptist like many of us do, please do as well. But I just hope that this is encouraging to many of you who may be struggling with your mental health, may have family members struggling with their mental health, or just need encouragement, tools, and resources to help you get through the challenges of day to day. And with that being said, enjoy this interview, this very inspiring interview with Reverend Dr. Tori Butler. I just love when I have fellow alum come on my show because, again, it shows that those who went to McDaniel College, the lineage is strong with brilliance and excellence. And today, y'all, I have one of, I know I say I have a lot of favorite people, but she low-key raised me when I was at McDaniel. She brought me into her bosom and kept me in line at McDaniel College. She saw that young lady who left home for the first time really in life and kept me together. I have Reverend Dr. Tori Butler on my show today. And as a person, just to describe her, she is a walking definition of how the Spirit of the Lord can work within you and move within you as a genuine person. It is not forced. It makes me want to pass a collection plate and go to her church up in Baltimore area, because who she is authentically is expressed both behind the pulpit and in her day-to-day life. So that being said, I am going to give her her flowers first by reading her bio. And y'all, this bio is long because she got degrees, plural degrees. Put on my broadcaster voice. Okay. Reverend Dr. Tori Butler was born and raised in Baltimore, Maryland. She received a BA in History and International Relations from McDaniel College, my alma mater, in Westminster, Maryland. She received her call to ministry following a semester abroad in Argentina. She is a graduate of the Divinity School at Duke University, where she received her master's degree of Divinity. She was recruited out of Duke to serve in the Texas Annual Conference of the United Methodist Church, where she ministered in three cross-cultural appointments, as well as being the chaplain at Wiley College. She was ordained by Bishop Janice Riggle Huey in 2014. By God's amazing grace and through tremendous perseverance, on May 13, 2019, she received her Doctor of Ministry degree from Emory University with a concentration in biblical interpretation and proclamation. Her Doctor of Ministry project is entitled The Power of Mourning, Creating Spaces of Vulnerability for Black Clergy Women to Lament and Holler. She has had the honor of speaking at the 57th anniversary of the March on Washington. She has offered the invocation at the 23rd National Action Network's MLK Day breakfast, where President Biden was a keynote speaker. As in, they checked her security background, so she good. Dr. Butler is a contributor to Do Not Be Afraid, Bishops and Young Clergy Share Signs of Resurrection and Words of Hope. I am Black, I am Christian, I am Methodist. What's next? 22 United Methodist leaders discussed the future of the church, preaching during a pandemic, the rhetoric of the Black preaching tradition, and most recently, the Methodist Book of Daily Prayer. She has been featured as a panelist for Emory University, Howard University, Hood Theological Seminary, the Congregation of Black Pastors, and the General Commission on Religion and Race. Dr. Butler has taught courses for her district lay servant program, as well as for the Maple Springs Bible College and Seminary and Hood Theological Seminary. She is a commentator for the United Methodist News with a platform entitled Hollering for Change, where she expresses her passion for lament. She gives voice to the individual and communal pain with the expectation that God will do something about it. Dr. Butler is beyond blessed to be the senior pastor of Ashburytown Neck United Methodist Church in Severna Park, Maryland, where worship can't be explained but must be experienced. As a pastor, she invites people into a transformative encounter with the Holy Spirit. She wants all to experience the healing, redeeming, and restorative love of God. Her calling to help others discern their purpose, provide them with tools and training, and offer opportunity for them to live in the fullness of God. In the words of Ron Canole, if you can use anything, the Lord can use me. Take my hands, Lord, and my feet. Touch my heart, Lord, and speak through me. If you can use anything, Lord, you can use me. And with that being said, welcome to Coffee with Yvonne. I did an extra one for her, y'all. Reverend Dr. Tori Butler, hi.
Hello. It is an honor and a privilege to be here with you. It's always a lot to hear your bio. I typically tell people just to, you know, skim through it, pick out what you feel like you know, and what you want the people to know. And so it's just an honor and privilege to be with you. I'm grateful for your ask to come and talk with you on today around this topic of mental health and faith. And I'm just hoping that somebody might be encouraged on tonight or today, whenever you listen to the podcast, and that our conversation would just be a blessing.
I love that. When I was telling my mom, Tori, that I was having you on the show, she was like, "You gonna have a pastor?" I said, "Mom, this is not any pastor. It's one of my fellow alums." So I feel like it is coming from an authentic place when I was reaching out to you, not just a cold outreach to someone I never met. And to your point, you know, I think there's such a conversation now around the Black church, mental health as it relates to religion, some who embrace it, some who do not. But as a senior pastor, you use the word to deliver messages of faith, hope, and triumph to your congregation. You briefly mentioned this in your bio, but what inspired you to take on such an impactful leadership role?
Jesus. In all honesty, it really started off with dealing with grief. Part of my story that you don't know, while we were at McDaniel, actually probably right before you got to McDaniel, I had experienced a lot of loss. So I had one aunt that passed away my freshman year. And so I'm leaving English class and driving the 40 minutes to Baltimore to be with her at her bedside as she was transitioning. And then a year and a half later, I had another aunt pass away. One of my friends was drinking and driving, and he passed away while we were at McDaniel. Someone that I grew up with at my home church, he was a lot younger than I was at the time, got hit by a transit bus in Baltimore. And it was just one thing after the other, after the other, after the other. And I got to a place where I remember one day I went to gospel choir. And as a side, at McDaniel College, if you wanted to see Black people, you joined Gospel Church. Didn't matter if you could sing or not, but it was a guarantee if you would see Black people on Wednesday night at Gospel Choir rehearsal. And the choir director, not the minister of music, but the actual director, his name was Carl. And I remember going in to rehearsal one night and just bawling, just being just kind of, and it was probably, to be honest with you, probably one of my first episodes of depression that I didn't know was depression at the time. Because I was so overwhelmed with grief, and I was like crying almost every single day for probably 2-3 weeks. It was just, it was there. And so, but during that time of grief, I literally heard, you know, the voice of God tell me that life is too short not to serve him. And so I didn't necessarily know what that meant. And so kind of, I get this word, I get baptized at 21, January, I got saved at 20. Literally, it was like a 6-month period of time. It was my, the spring semester of my junior year of college.
Okay.
So I get saved at January. I get baptized probably June, July, and then I leave to go to Argentina for 6 months.
Oh, wow.
And so in that time frame, God began to really minister to me. And because now I'm isolated, I'm apart from, you know, family, friends, and it's just me and God in this other country, right? And I come back. There's a Black Student Leadership Conference that we go to that's kind of hosted by the Office of Multicultural Studies that takes us to this conference in DC. And it's there that there's a speaker, well, there's a couple speakers, but one speaker essentially gives an altar call. Mm. And I didn't necessarily know what I was called to do. I just knew that I was called. And I had an internship at that time. And I worked for Baltimore Gas and Electric. And my supervisor and the women that I worked with all were in the church, some form or fashion. But my direct supervisor was a deaconess. And she knew that I was called. She didn't want to tell me, because she also has seen what it meant to be a woman in ministry and all of the different things that are associated with that. So she didn't necessarily want to come straight out and tell me this is what it was. So she connects me with someone, because I leave the conference thinking I'm going to get a PhD in religion, not thinking I'm going to be a pastor. That's not even on my radar at all. Because prior to that, I was either going to law school or public policy school. So being a pastor is just nowhere. I ain't trying to do that. I'm not even thinking about that, to be quite honest. And so when I come back, it's just very clear. It's very clear that this is what I'm supposed to be doing with my life. And so, like I said, my supervisor connects me with someone at Princeton, and she's not at the university, she's at the seminary. And when I get to the seminary, I now know, oh crap, this is where I'm supposed to be. Like, we were there together, but I don't think we knew all of that was going on.
So, but you were talking about the hills and valleys. Oh, and I know a bit about that because, as I told you, I was raised in Black church, and my mom is a strong believer of crying out when you feel that you need to express the needs of your heart, or like, God, why me? Like, why am I the one being picked on? Why am I the one who's going through this trial and tribulation? But can you continue with how you help your parishioners go through the things that they may be struggling with around mental health?
I'm going to give you the spiritual things, and then we can go practical. Yeah. Okay. So spiritually, I start with talking about lament. That's what that's something I'm really passionate about. A lament is crying out to God and expecting God to respond. It's the voice of pain. It's the voice of prayer. It's individual. It's communal. It says, God, come and see about me. God, this isn't fair. God, this is too heavy for me to carry. This lament allows you to be honest with God, because sometimes we think that we can't always go to God with our full selves, but we forget that God is omniscient, meaning that he knows all things. So that means we can say, God, God, I'm not feeling this. God, this really sucks. God, this is too heavy for me to carry, and I don't have any capacity left. God, I need you to show up right now. That's lament. And so I think, you know, number one is just giving people language about being honest with God, being honest in their prayers, and knowing that not every prayer that we pray is always going to be, oh, bless the Lord, oh, my soul. You know, I try to give them the language of scripture. You know, one of my most favorite texts is Psalm 13. And it says, how long, oh Lord, how long? How long will you forget me forever? How long will you allow my enemies to encamp around me? But I trust in your faithfulness. And I think it's important for us to have the language of the text that allows us to give voice to our pain and our concerns. So that's one way that I try to address it. Another way is through like centering prayer. I teach people how to do breath prayers. And it's basically, you know, mindfulness, you know, it's deep breathing and reminding people that God is as close to you as your very breath, and having them breathe in and breathe out. And sometimes take a phrase like, Jesus is my peace, and just break it apart. I'll tell them, repeat after me, Jesus is, and then take a breath in, then exhale out, my peace. And we'll keep kind of going through that. And until maybe someone is feeling anxious, you know, maybe anxiety is permeating their atmosphere, and it's a way just to calm everything down and get them back to center. And so within in the spiritual realm, that's something I do. Now, practically, oftentimes I teach people how to find mental health resources. And one of the things I do is literally, if someone tells me, because they know, as a side, my church knows that I support mental health. I also have, there's a therapist that attends my church. She started doing, some seminars for us, around like how to deal with our negative thoughts, and kind of dealing with past trauma, and giving people the language of scripture, but also the language of, you know, of psychology. I've also hosted a how to overcome the holiday blues like seminar, because I think it's important for people to, again, know that just as much as we believe in God, God also gives us doctors. God also gives us therapists. God also gives us medication to be able to deal with things that are beyond our control.
I appreciate you sharing that, because that was something I was going to ask about, the whole, sometimes there's skepticism about doctors and mental health practitioners and religion. Some of our, you know, older folks and people around our age believe you could pray everything away, that things can be done, you know, by prayer. But like you said, God put the talent in these people's lives to help us with our ailments and the things that we may be struggling with. You know, for me, for example, I didn't realize, Tori, for a long time that there was a history of depression in my family on my mom's side. And no one ever told me about it until I went through my own personal struggle with depression shortly after my grandmother passed away early 2020, when she was sick for a long time. But I was experiencing it before that, when I was with an employer who basically, it was an attack on my mental health every single day. And I didn't realize me crying every time I walked into the office, because that space triggered me, was a form of my body reacting negatively to that, but also my mental health. I just thought I had to do what I normally had to do, be strong, suck it up, you know, push through. And when I sat down with the therapist, she said, you know, you were going through a period of depression, right? I said, no, I wasn't. I was just stressed out and, you know, didn't like my job. And she said, well, when you were going through that period, did you ever feel like you didn't want to go out and experience life? Like you just wanted to stay in the house and be in bed? I said, yeah, but I thought I was just tired. She said, uh-huh. So what about your mood? Did your mood change? I was like, yeah, but I just thought, you know, I was just needed rest or something. She's like, uh-huh. But were you getting angry with people for the little things and no reason and having a response off of that? So she was showing me how what I was going through was considered a form of depression. And with therapy, I was able to, as I described it to friends and family, pull myself out of what I felt was this dark hole. And it was a hole so dark, but there was like a tiny pin of light that was still in that hole and that I could see. And I was doing everything I could through therapy to get to the light. And eventually the light got bigger and the darkness got smaller. But not everyone responded well to me telling them that, hey, I went through a period of depression. These are the things I was dealing with. These are the boundaries I need to create in order for me to have my mental health intact. But surprisingly, those who did get it understand that that was what was needed for me to be back to the best version of myself. So long story short, for those for those who are skeptical about therapy and other mental health resources, what are some ways that they can break free of that mindset? And I'm talking about Big Mama and them. I'm talking about your aunties. I'm talking about my man, you know, those who think that they don't need therapy, but baby, you need to be on that couch more than anybody I know. So what would you say to them?
I would break it down in so many different ways. For the ones that's my man, I would be like, look, if you watch some of these reality TV shows, even they go into therapy. Okay. So that's number one. Okay. But for Big Mama and them, I would say this. John 5 tells us the story of Jesus at the pool of Bethesda. And there was a man who was sitting on the side of the pool. And remember, the pool was supposed to be a place of healing. And if he could get inside the pool, he should have been made whole. And Jesus literally asked him the question, do you want to be healed? Do you want to be made whole? And so, in order for us to be made whole, we got to participate in our own healing. And that means that we have to fight for our lives, fight for ourselves. When you know that something isn't wrong, if something is wrong with you, be it emotionally, be it physically, you have to advocate for you. And it doesn't really matter what anybody else says, because they're not having to deal with the pain or the strain of putting one foot in front of the other, like you are right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say you have to fight for you. But I also would say this, there's a thing Brene Brown calls braving, and it's a part of her discourse on the anatomy of trust. And this is what she says. This is how braving is for an acronym that means boundaries, reliability, accountability, vault, integrity, non-judgment, and generosity. And I'll break this down for you. She does a better job than me. So if you are interested a little bit more in the anatomy of trust, you can Google Brene Brown on YouTube and you'll find a couple of different videos. But for the sake of our conversation, one of the things that we find ourselves in is that when everything falls apart, it's a risk to be vulnerable, right? It's a risk to tell somebody that London Bridge is falling down. It's a risk to tell somebody I'm not okay. And so when we are engaged in braving, we're going to a person that we trust because, you know, we have clear boundaries. Right? We've established clear boundaries along the way. We know what's okay and what's not okay. This person has shown themselves to be reliable. you know that you can rely on them beyond this instance that's going on right now. They're accountable, meaning that if you or they have made a mistake, you are both willing to make amends, right? Vault, meaning that they're going to hold your secret or your concerns to themselves. They're not out here telling everybody and their mama about your business. You know, that's a part of it. They have some integrity. They're going to choose courage over comfort. They're going to be non-judgmental and also offer generosity, i.e. grace. That's braving. And so when we are talking about sharing the depths of our pain with somebody, we have to be able to trust that they have good boundaries, that they're reliable, that they're accountable, that they're a vault, that they're going to hold our stuff, that they're going to have some integrity, and that they're going to offer us grace.
When you talk about your mental health, there is such a fear of people looking at you like you crazy, first and foremost. And there's also a fear of people not understanding what you're going through. You know, depression, mental health looks different in everyone. And especially for me, being totally transparent, I was going through a period of depression, honestly, for about almost 3 years and had no idea what I was going through. I was functioning. And I found out from my therapist, I think it was called like functional depression, in which outwardly you are showing up, but internally you're like a foundation that's cracked. And you're still trying to build on to hold everything together, but things are crumbling, you know, but you're still carrying the weight and showing up for the world. And there were some days, Tori, that I would just be in the room, but I was just mentally not there anymore. And I would be at brunch with friends, having a good time, like outwardly, but internally I was checked out. And it wasn't until one day when I was at work and I had a moment, I'm not going to curse in front of you because you will pass them, but I'm not going to do that. But I had a moment where I was about to lose my ish in the middle of downtown DC when I was walking into the office, because that space at that moment, I could not do it anymore. And I didn't know how to verbally express that. So I went in my office, closed the door, and I silently screamed for 5 minutes in my office. And it wasn't until, it's funny how the good Lord sends you a way out, but I was ended up being laid off, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me, but I was still functioning through the world, not addressing the issues that I was going through. So are there other figures in the Bible that maybe had a relation to mental health that maybe we don't know about because we look at the Bible as an ancient text instead of something that could be applied today? Like, I think about my homeboy Job. Job was going through it. You know, Job lost everything. He was out looking at God, pulling up on him like, fam, what's good? Like, what's going on? So were there other members, or not members, figures of the Bible who may have been struggling with mental health that you can think of?
So, yeah. So this is the challenge, right? So when I bring some of this up, some people will use these verses to make make mental health issues spiritual issues versus being mental health issues.
Okay.
So for instance, in Mark 5, we had the situation with the demoniac, where there's this man who's demon possessed. He is in the cave and the demons are tormenting him day in and day out, and he's not getting any relief. And so the story goes that the demons recognize Jesus, and Jesus asks, who is it? And they say, I'm legion, because we are many, right? And so, and then Jesus exorcises the demon out of the man, and the demons go into the pigs. That's one of the most really dramatic stories. So oftentimes people think that these mental health issues are these spiritual warfare issues, whereas somebody might need medication. You know, some things do come free out of prayer. But some things require a couch. Some people, some things require a psychiatrist, i.e. medication, sometimes a hospital stay.
Well, you're very and right. Go ahead.
I'm being for real. Like some things we want to pray away, you know, but we also have to recognize we are not Jesus.
No, we ain't.
There was one, that's one Savior. He already died on the cross and was resurrected for our sins. And we are not saviors. And so although God says the same power that was in Christ Jesus is in us, God didn't give us the ability to fix that type of stuff. God allow other folk to have some training to walk alongside of us when we can't get it together. And so I think we have to be very careful when we discuss, try to turn mental health issues into spiritual issues. Cause some stuff, like real talk, like some stuff is just us. We talk about how the enemy is actually the inner me. And so we got to identify the stuff that's just us that we need to deal with on our own. We gotta discern what our spiritual problems that we need to work out between us and God. And then there are other times that are things that are just there's trauma that we have experienced that has been passed on generationally. Because as a side, being a Black or brown person in this country, you have experienced generational trauma. It's called racism. So with that being said, there are some things that we carry over from our physical DNA that we are constantly wrestling with and having to deal with, right? And so some things are not spiritual, and we have to be careful about spiritualizing non-spiritual things. But then there are all these other times that we are intentionally choosing to be anxious versus choosing God. Because our scripture also tells us be anxious for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And so the other question is, what does our relationship with God look like? Because if everything around us is triggering, you know, again, some of this can be a spiritual thing. It can be just a regular mental health thing. But some of it is us not regulating ourselves through prayer, through communication with God, through worship. You know, we're missing out on our connectedness with God because we're allowing everything else around us to take precedence.
Oh my gosh. The listeners can't see, but I was doing the grandmama rock back and forth in the chair. I was throwing my hands up in agreement. I was ready to get up out of the chair and run around the room because that word, I know we're on a podcast interview, but my God, that was a word right there. That spoke so deep to my spirit. You just don't know, Tori, because I felt such guilt for what I was going through. I felt it was my fault. I felt that I was disconnected from my spirit of knowing who I am and who God created me to be. Like, I struggled for a very long time about that. I'm not going to cry. And it was so difficult for me because there were times I would sit in my car and I would pray. And one time, I think I pulled up on God and I asked him, I said, did you forget about me? Did you forget I am here? Like, what did I do? What did I do so wrong? Like, there were times that I got angry with him. And I had to, through therapy, recenter myself and also recenter my relationship. And one of the things I do, and, you know, please let me know if this is good for my listeners as well to do. I say my affirmations every morning to myself. And affirmations to me are a form of prayer. You know, I speak life into myself. I speak life into what I want for the day. I speak life into what I want for the future because I know there's power in the tongue. I live by that phrase. I know faith without work is dead, but I also know that if you have faith the size of a mustard seed, you can move mountains. And with those three things combined, I know that the words I am speaking is laying the seeds of foundational growth for me to move those mountains that stand before me for me to be great. And I have re-strengthened my relationship and my walk with God that has allowed for me to understand that, hey, I ain't expecting you to be perfect. I'm saying it in layman's terms, but I ain't expecting you to be perfect. I just want you to show up as your authentic self of who you are day in and day out and use the gifts and talent I have given you specifically to share that with the world. And I had to embrace that instead of fighting it. So that being said, for those who are looking to have their own affirmations or daily prayer, how can they get started? Like, what are some of the things should be the key to when they're building their affirmations, when they're speaking life into themselves?
So I want to take a step back, if it's okay. I want to give us a little technical thing. So every time we have experienced trauma, trauma affects our brains, all right? So every time that you speak life, every time you do your daily affirmation, you are literally rerouting your brain. You are healing yourself internally by speaking life.
Is that why I feel so good every time I do it?
Yeah, because you are literally rerouting. So part, remember, whenever you experience depression, right? You are experiencing a traumatic moment, and you know, and that trauma has rerouted some things. And remember, one of the things, a side effect or a symptom of depression and anxiety is this, the focusing in on the negative, right? Feeling not worthy, worthlessness, if you will. And so this idea of speaking life, you are literally telling your brain that what you are feeling on the inside ain't right, because God says I'm the head and not the tail. I'm above and not below. That I am, you know, that I'm a child of the Most High God, that you know, that I am supposed to be here, that God has called me to walk in light, that there's just so many different things that we can decree and declare over ourselves on a regular basis. But as we are doing that, we are literally healing ourselves by speaking life.
And I am not going to cry. I am not going to cry. I'm really like, I'm pulling it together. But go ahead. Go ahead.
No, but I think that's so important for us to say that God, you know, remember I said earlier, we have to participate in our own healing. And by the fact of you speaking life, you are participating in your own healing. You're telling the devil, the enemy on your job, you know, the person that's getting on your last nerve, you are telling all those folks who have plans to harm you that there is a God out there who says, I am worthy, I am seen, I am loved, that God has designed for me to be here to participate in life and not just live, but thrive, all of those sorts of things. Like when we speak life, we have the ability to shift the atmosphere.
Amen. And where that collection played at? I'm gonna need to drop something up in that joint real quick, real quick. So
I take Cash App, Zelle, Venmo.
Not the Cash App for the pastor.
Hey, we got it all.
So basically, when you're doing these affirmations, like you said, you're rewiring your brain. So it's tying in the mental health practice, but also the biblical verse, there's power in the tongue. So it's tying those two things in together. And I think it's really important, especially with, you know, Gen Z, millennials aside, but Gen Z is going through it, Dr. Tori. They're going through it and they're experiencing mental health struggles on a whole new level that I have never seen before. But what recommendations would you give to the millennial aunties and uncles and parents who are raising these Gen Z children, just trying to do their best to speak life into them and to have open and honest discussions about mental health? Like, what are some of your recommendations?
So I want to give a tool. There's a great tool. It's an app called the COVID Coach, and it's made by the Veterans Administration. And what I like about the COVID Coach is that if you know, you can get it on your Google Play, you can get it on the app, your Apple Store, all of that. So just let you know, it's available. It's free for everybody, but it has different techniques. It has a body scan. And if you don't want to use the COVID Coach, you can print off a body scan and you can kind of color in the different places and spaces on your body where you feel tension or feel anxious. And you can kind of begin to see how your anxiety is showing up in your body and giving people a tangible tool to see it. As well as you can do grounding techniques through it. So say for instance, you're feeling really frazzled. They have, have techniques for that. They give you breathing techniques as well. So that's just something simple to do. But like I said, one of the things I really do believe in breathing. I have been in situations as a pastor watching people have panic attacks because of whatever was going on. And these weren't millennials. These were older folk. Somehow I was in the vicinity when they were experiencing panic attacks. And so one of the things I tell people all the time is for us to kind of just have a calming presence. And so I just put on a really soft voice, because sometimes we want to meet their energy with the same energy, right? And so, and that's the wrong thing to do. Dr. Tama Bryant talks about irritable depression. And so sometimes we thinking that somebody got an attitude problem and it's just their irritable depression showing up.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And so we done written them off as having an attitude problem, but this is the way that their emotions are coming out. It's through the irritation, right? And so, like I said, sometimes I lead people into a guided meditation and guided, breathing techniques, and I count, I'll have them take a deep breath in, and then I'll say, hold it 1, 2, 3, and have them let it release it. And then I just begin to just speak life as they're breathing. You know, God is as close to you as your very breath. Like, you are in a safe space. You're calm. Everything around you is solid. There's no one here to harm you. You're okay. Whatever it is that kind of comes to mind to decrease the anxiety. And don't get me wrong. There are times that I'll go in with a spiritual warfare type of prayer. I don't want you to think that I'm, miss meditation and contemplative. But I can be, because sometimes one of the things that I've learned along the way is that people are so used to being met with the same combative energy that they give off. You have no idea what it's like for someone to approach you lovingly and how lovingly and calmly, and how transformative that can be. I have a woman at my church who has a little bit of a challenging personality for some people in the church. But we end up having a meeting, and I spoke to her in such a calm voice the entire time, and spoke to her about her value, and spoke to her about all the gifts and graces that she's offered God and offered the church. And I watched her kind of break down a little bit, because I know other folk were meeting her with the contentious energy, where I was meeting her in a loving and compassionate energy. And we have to remember that we serve a God who is love. Who is love that came to life for us. And we have to be willing to show up as love for other people and just sometimes bring it down a notch. Everything is not always going to be, it's not always going to be. It's not, because again, sometimes we got to cast some things out. Like, don't get me wrong. Again, I believe that the enemy is real. I believe, demonic forces and all of that. But I also believe in showing love and compassion so that people can really experience the transformative power of a loving and redeeming God.
Mm. Ooh, I think that is a good way to close out the main questions I have before I go into my quick fire questions.
Sure.
Because the way I'm about to stretch out on this ground here and about to have a whole moment, Lord have mercy, this episode, I'm calling my mama after this. Like, mama, that was the most cleansing conversation I have ever had, and affirming.
But I also want to say this, like, we also have to give grace to the older generation. because you got to remember, they are a generation where the healthcare system were doing experiments on them, right? And so the hospitals weren't always a safe place for them to go. We also have to remember that for them, the church was the only place that they could tell their feelings and their emotions to. You talked about growing up, you know, Pentecostal. This is why folk were running around a church. This is the only place that they could have release from whatever the physical, emotional strains of the day, that shouting they were doing, that praising they were doing, was allowing them to let go of their pain. And so I want to also get us to a place of not condemning the past, but understanding where they came from and say, but there's just a different way forward. You know, we can still embrace some of those practices in terms of, you know, taking it to the Lord in prayer, you know, laying some things at the altar. All of those things are important. Testifying, all of that is still an important part of our faith traditions, right? Particularly if you're part of a Black church tradition. But we also, things have evolved enough that we can participate in therapy, and we can, you know, find group therapy that's free out there. We can go to our own personal therapist if that's working for us. Like, there are just different things that we can do, y'all. That's okay.
And that's why you're the pastor, because you brought that full circle right there. You got me sitting here thinking, she right. I got to give them their grace, because, you know, they will give me grace as well. So you're exactly right. So the next thing I have for you are these quick fire questions. And these quick fire questions, Tori, are top of the dome. So don't overthink it. Just go with your first reaction. Is that cool?
Okay. Cool.
Okay. In your opinion, who is the best rapper or singer of all time?
Kelly Clarkson.
Yes! I love Kelly Clarkson! She's one of my favorites.
Not necessarily because of, like, her songs specifically. It's because she is able to sing everybody's music and still sound good.
Yes, she has true range. I've seen her live in concert, and the mic is on. It's always on.
Yes.
Next question for you. You won a boatload of money. What is the first thing that you do?
Pay my tithes.
That's the response I thought it was going to be. And then you've discovered you have supernatural powers or magic powers. What kind of powers do you have?
Healing.
Ooh, I love that. I love that. And it'll be the kind of healing that, you know, once you touch them with your hands, it fixes. Yeah. Okay. I like that. It's very Marvel kind of vibes. And finally, if you were a coffee, what kind of coffee would you be?
I wouldn't be coffee. I would be tea and probably orange spice, because I got a little kick.
Okay, little kick. I like that for you. Well, thank you so much for joining me for coffee today. How can people find out more about you, your long mini receipts, and if they want to join your congregation to learn, to hear you on preach on Sundays, you know, where can they find out more about you?
They can find me on Facebook. They can find me on Instagram at Anointed Phoenix. They can find my church, Asbury Towneck United Methodist Church in Severna Park, Maryland. We're also on Facebook and YouTube, and also our website, www.asburytowneck.org.
I love that. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Chat with you soon.
Thank you.
Well, how do we feel? Do I need to pass a collection plate? Let me know. I put some coins in there to get it started. I don't have no dollar bills, nothing that folds, but I got a couple quarters. But I hope that you're inspired by that message today that Reverend Dr. Tori Butler shared with the listeners. And I really hope that you are able to walk away with something that will help you again in your journey. As always, I appreciate you for listening to Coffee with Yvonne. I appreciate you for coming back for this fifth season of Coffee with Yvonne. And I'm looking forward to chatting with you soon. We'll have another guest joining me for coffee for another conversation. And I will chat with you soon. I got to go pack to go to New York. I forgot to mention that. I leave tomorrow. So, okay, bye. Coffee with Yvonne is produced and edited by Yvonne Pearson. Coffee with Yvonne is created by Pink Dollhouse Marketing. You can catch the latest episodes by subscribing to Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.